The Liar by Henry James. Chapter 1. The train was half an hour late, and the drive from the station longer than he had supposed, so that when he reached the house its inmates had dispersed to dress for dinner, and he was conducted straight to his room. The curtains were drawn in this asylum, the candles were lighted, the fire was bright, and when the servant had quickly put out his clothes, the comfortable little place became suggestive, seemed to promise a pleasant house, a various party, talks, acquaintances, affinities, to say nothing of very good cheer. He was too occupied with his profession to pay many country visits, but he had heard people who had more time for them speak of establishments where they do you very well. He foresaw that the proprietors of stays would do him very well. In his bedroom at a country house, he always looked first at the books on the shelf and the prints on the walls. He considered that these things gave a sort of measure of the culture and even of the character of his hosts. Though he had but little time to devote to them on this occasion, a cursory inspection assured him that if the literature, as usual, was mainly American and humorous, the art consisted neither of the watercolor studies of the children, nor of goody engravings. The walls were adorned with old-fashioned lithographs, principally portraits of country gentlemen with high collars and riding gloves. This suggested, and it was encouraging, that the tradition of portraiture was held in esteem. There was the customary novel of Mr. Le Fanu for the bedside, the ideal reading in a country house for the hours after midnight. Oliver Lyon could scarcely forbear beginning it while he buttoned his shirt. Perhaps that is why he not only found everyone assembled in the hall when he went down, but perceived from the way the move to dinner was instantly made that they had been waiting for him. There was no delay to introduce him to a lady, for he went out in a group of unmatched men without this appendage. The men straggling behind sidled and edged as usual at the door of the dining room, and the denouement of this little comedy was that he came to his place last of all. This made him think that he was in a sufficiently distinguished company, for if he had been humiliated, which he was not, he could not have consoled himself with the reflection that such a fate was natural to an obscure, struggling young artist. He could no longer think of himself as very young, alas, and if his position was not so brilliant as it ought to be, he could no longer justify it by calling it a struggle. He was something of a celebrity, and he was apparently in a society of celebrities. This idea added to the curiosity with which he looked up and down the long table as he settled himself in his place. When he was working well, he found himself in that happy state, the happiest of all for an artist, in which things in general contribute to the particular idea and fall in with it, help it on and justify it, so that he feels for the hour as if nothing in the world can happen to him, even if it come in the guise of disaster or suffering, that will not be an enhancement of his subject. Moreover, there was an exhilaration, he had felt it before, in the rapid change of scene, the jump in the dusk of the afternoon from foggy London and his familiar studio to a centre of festivity in the middle of Hertfordshire, and a drama half-acted, a drama of pretty women and noted men and wonderful orchids in silver jars. He observed, as a not unimportant fact, that one of the pretty women was beside him. A gentleman sat on his other hand. But he went into his neighbors little as yet. He was busy looking out for Sir David, whom he had never seen, and about whom he naturally was curious. Evidently, however, Sir David was not at dinner.